We'll hear arguments now in Bender against Williamsport School. Mr. Smart, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, the facts of this case are not extremely complicated, but they can be misunderstood. This case does not involve teacher-led or government-prescribed religious activities. Very simply, the students from Williamsport Area High School, which we represent, wanted to meet during the extracurricular activity period. The school was originally content to let them meet. Then permission was withdrawn after the first meeting, but solely because the school's lawyer felt that allowing student meetings containing prayer and religious expression would violate the Establishment Clause. Now, since the lawyer's belief was the only reason for the denial of meeting space in this case, the legal issue is very narrow, and that is simply whether the Establishment Clause requires a high school to censor out the religious expression of private individuals after having first created an opportunity for students to engage in their own self-initiated activities and expression.
Mr. Smart, do you think there's a jurisdictional question at all in this case?
No, Your Honor. By that, do you mean
Mr. Youngman and his position in the case. Did the Court of Appeals have jurisdiction, do you think?
In our opinion, they did, Your Honor. And the case is properly here. It's a valid case or controversy. However,
and why do you think they had jurisdiction?
Well, it was our judgment that Mr. Youngman probably stood in the same position as Mrs. Vashti McCollum in the McCollum case in 1948 as a parent. But if the Court should decide that Mr. Youngman does not have standing, the correct disposition of this case would be to vacate the Third Circuit decision and reinstate the decision of the District Court. Now, it's important to understand that in this...
Mr. Youngman is no longer a member of the school board, is he?
Mr. Youngman is no longer a member of the school board, as I understand it, Your Honor.
And he no longer has any children in the school?
He has a child the Williamsport Area High School.
How old?
I believe his child is in the ninth grade, if I'm not mistaken.
Now, how does that bear on the issues? He was sued in his official capacity, as I understand it.
Yes, Your Honor.
Was there any finding of liability against him individually in any sense?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor.
Then how is it relevant that he's got a child in the suit? Could any parent have appealed this judgment?
Well, Your Honor, in reviewing the McCollum case, it appeared that was the case, but we would be quite content.
But in the McCollum case, wasn't there an allegation that the child was being offended in some way by these practices? Nobody said Mr. Youngman's children are unhappy in any way, are they? Is there anything in the record about his children?
I don't know the details on that, Your Honor. We felt that he would be able to repair his case if that issue was raised. If we were in error, we would be quite pleased to have the district court decision in this case reinstated since it was in favor of our clients.
He has no liability for fees, does he? He couldn't.
There still wouldn't be a case of controversy even in the district court.
Yes, Your Honor, he was a member of the school board in the district court.
He isn't any longer.
He is no longer a member of the school board.
Well, I know, but here's an unappeal. Suppose the Court of Appeals had said the case of controversy has just washed out. Wouldn't it have directed the district court to dismiss the case?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe so. I believe it would have been a valid decision at the district court level since all parties were properly represented.
Well, it might have been a valid decision at the time the district court rendered it, but our practice, I think, since the time of the Munsingware case, some years ago, has been to say that if it becomes moot on appeal, the whole thing washes out. In other words, you would simply go back and there would be no district court decision. You'd have no court of appeals decision.
Well, if that were the case, the Court of Appeals would have two options if that were the law, Your Honor. One would be to treat it as a case or controversy that is capable of repetition yet evading review, or to wash the whole thing out. But
against Mr. Youngman's position in the board itself, 8-1.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. I believe that.
So he had no support for his position at all, did he?
No, Your Honor, he did not.
Well, of course, the city council doesn't, or the school board doesn't decide the constitutional questions with finality, do they?
No, Your Honor. However, they do decide what course the school district takes. And the respondent is here in the capacity as an original member of this lawsuit against whom we sought individual liability, including attorney's fees. And he's represented that he's in this lawsuit at this point as a parent.
So he could have been a plaintiff in the case originally.
Yes, Your Honor. That's our view of the McCollum case.
And so you think that he's still in the case?
We believe he's still in the case, and we believe it's still a valid case or controversy. Now, it's important to understand that in this case, the record shows that the school did not simply make available certain specified activities to the students during this activity period. The school did not say, students, you can do this, this, or this. Take your pick of those. Instead, the school said to the students, students, you decide what you will do during the activity period. We think that constitutionally it is indistinguishable, Your Honor, that
in the Whitmore case, did the students decide what it was they wanted to talk about?
That's exactly correct, Your Honor.
If they wanted to advance socialism, they could do it?
Yes, Your Honor.
If they wanted to, they were free entirely, weren't they?
They were free entirely to conduct their meetings as they saw fit. And we believe that the district court findings in this case that was the case in the Williamsport Area High School are correct, that the school district
do something, but they go outside and set the steps?
No, Your Honor. The only reason they couldn't do that is because the school requires them to remain in the building, as I understand it. And that's part of the reason for having all the activities, as I understand it, inside the building, unless perhaps there's special permission to go outside. Now,
you mentioned that some of these youngsters were in the ninth grade. I think his present child is in the ninth grade. Do you carry your argument to the junior high level in those schools which, at the junior high level, have a ninth grade?
Your Honor, our case concerns only the grades 14 or age 14, grades 9 through 12. 14 through 18 are the
Well, suppose, as in another school district, your high school was consisted of grades 10, 11, and 12, and the junior high had grade 9, as is the case in many communities. Does your argument also carry you to the grade 9 in those communities?
No. Well, it would depend on the whether the school had created a free speech opportunity for the students through some kind of self-initiated activity for them.
Well, then you would go down to the first and second grades on that basis.
No. Probably the closest you would get in elementary school to a student-initiated activity for them would be recess.
Well, suppose they wanted to play chess, and there were a couple of chess prodigies, and they formed a chess club in third grade. Your argument apply?
I think that there is going to be, of course, the Third Circuit, the Court of Appeals, was concerned about the impressionability and age of students, and I'd have to frankly admit that I think there is some age at which any sort of religious activities going on may reasonably be interpreted by a student as having been sponsored by the school. For instance, the case that Judge Friendly decided involving the kindergarten students where there was a claim that they should be allowed to say a prayer before grace. If the teacher leads them in that prayer, why, it's not going to be a voluntary prayer. And at that age, nothing is voluntary to those students unless they're maladjusted students.
Mr. Smart, in this case, a faculty member was present at the Petros meetings.
That's correct.
But not participating, is that the record evidence?
That is exactly the record evidence, Your Honor. And
does the record disclose whether the teachers had been instructed not to actively participate?
The record does not disclose that, although I think that is clear that is what did happen.
Would your conclusion be the same if the teacher had actively participated in the meeting?
No, Your Honor. We believe that the crucial constitutional distinction is the distinction between state action or government action and individual action, and that the only safe harbor of constitutional analysis is that distinction between Is the government acting in promoting or conducting this activity, or are private individuals acting? And what is the government's role? We look
Smart,
at the government's role.
If that's your position, supposing the time that's devoted to this activity is needed to qualify the school for its academic, diplomas and all the rest, and as I understand, you can't tell from the record whether it's counted or not. The Court of Appeals said they couldn't tell whether the activity period count toward the minimum requirement for hours in school under the state statute. Now, if it is required, then would it not be state action?
I don't see that that is a significant constitutional connection, Your Honor. If the school, in this case, determined that they wanted to take credit for the activity period and to apply it, that certainly was their prerogative to do so, because there is educational value in even self-initiated student activities. However, there's been no adjudication.
But if that's your position, why would it matter if the monitor was an employee of the school and who directed the activity? I don't understand how you reconcile that with your response to Justice O'Connor, is what I'm saying.
I'm not sure I understand the question.
The issue, as you put it, is whether it's state action or not.
That's right.
And if it's action that is necessary in order to have the state, these students be qualified for a state diploma, why is it not state action?
Well, Your Honor, the state action consists of having them on the premises in the question that you've put forth. The state action you want to focus on is who's doing the religious activity, who's promoting it, who's sponsoring it, who's encouraging people to participate. If the state is doing that, then it would violate the Constitution. But all the state has done here is to require these people to go to school, these students to be at school between certain hours. Now, not everything that goes on in the school grounds during those hours makes them a captive audience to that activity on the school. In fact, there's an inherent competition during this activity period between all of the activities that are going on. A student has to choose what he will do during that time, and he can even choose to start new activities during that time if he doesn't like any of the existing ones that are going on. And that's where we get the free speech opportunity for these students that was created, and that's how we draw the distinction between the government action in the case and the individual private action in the case. And this is a crucial distinction. Any departure from the distinction on government action versus private action will get us into constitutional difficulty. It'll get us into problems with excessive entanglement as we try to determine what students are doing at their meeting. Are they too religious at this meeting? Are they talking too much about religion? Do they have an invocation? That sort of thing. It will furthermore put us in the problem of having to tell these students that we cannot allow your meeting, because, you see, if we have a neutral policy, then somebody might think that we're sponsoring your activity. And so we can't have a neutral policy. We have to have a non-neutral policy. Now,
to the teacher, anything the record to show what the teacher is there for?
Yes, Your Honor. It is clear from the record the teacher was there and was instructed to simply be there in case of an emergency, to make sure the students were there and don't leave, that type of situation.
Couldn't that be accomplished in the hallways?
Couldn't it be accomplished in the hallways? No, Your Honor, they have...
you could, if you stationed yourself in the hallway, you'd find out whether or not you left.
That's right,
Unless
Your Honor.
You jumped out of window.
That's right, Your Honor, and that's a... That's an excellent point, Your Honor, and these students met in the cafeteria, and the doors, if there were any doors, could be secured, and the teacher could be in the hallway.
Was the teacher monitoring or anything? That's what I mean. No.
Your Honor, the teacher was grading tests during this time, and I think that's pretty...
Well, just needed, in case something comes up.
Well, Your Honor,
Like what?
Well... It is the duty of the school district to keep the students on the premises. If a fight breaks out in any respect, or the students start smoking marijuana or something of this nature, I hope the students wouldn't do that, but that If there's something like that occurs, the teacher is available to put a stop to that type of activity.
Mr. Smart, I thought the record indicated that the teacher was there to take the role, to be sure the students were present, and then to remain because of disciplinary problems.
There is a reference in the record to the teacher taking the role, although I think what actually happened was that the student signed a roster in actuality. The school has a practice of having a teacher or school employee present in all areas of the building where there are students. There are teachers stationed in the hallways between periods and during this activity period. That doesn't mean they're monitoring with the speech of the students in the hallway or censoring the speech of the students. It simply means that they are there to take care of any need that might arise and to keep the students on the premises.
Mr. Smart, in the appendix, pages 95 to 96, which is a deposition apparently, there's a question. Do you know of any, are there any school board policies or regulations requiring adult supervision of student clubs or student groups? Answer, it doesn't need to be. It's covered fairly adequately in state law. Student groups must be supervised by a professional employee of the Commonwealth. Well, as I understand your answer, you're interpreting the word supervision to mean just presence.
That's my understanding, Your Honor.
Do nothing else. Just be there.
I think that fits the record in this case.
Hardly the normal definition of supervision, is it?
Well, Your Honor, I think that if you look at the purpose of the activity period, it's not a curricular activity period. It's an extracurricular period.
But what is the situation? I don't think you answered Justice Stevens' question. Does this hour count toward the required number of hours for a school to operate?
It's my understanding that it does. However, I would urge on the court the fact that the school district itself calls these periods extracurricular. And I think the curricular
if it's required, what importance is the nomenclature that the school board puts on it as required or not required?
Well, I think the curricular-non-curricular distinction is a distinction this court has used in the past. For instance, in the school library case, the Board of Education, Island Tree School District versus PICO, the court did not look at the hours that this students had to be at the school. The court drew the distinction between the curricular activities and the non-curricular activities. And the position of this court has been that students have free speech rights in the public school. Our view of what the First Amendment requires in a public school is not a highly regimented, dictatorial type of situation outside of the classroom. When students are in the hallways or in self-initiated activities or in the cafeteria, they're able to exercise free speech rights. The school created that right here. All we're asking is that you not exclude one category, the religious student, from participation in that right simply because of the religiousness of it. Court has always held religious speech to the same protection as other forms of speech. Mr. Chief Justice, if I could, I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Mr. Freed.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. The federal interest in this case is direct and substantial. If the Court of Appeals is correct, and the respondents are correct, that the Establishment Clause forbids what these students chose to do, wanted to do, and what the school authorities were perfectly ready to have them do until the lawyers said otherwise, if the Court of Appeals is correct, then the subsequently enacted Equal Access Act is under grave constitutional doubt.
Mr. Freed, may I ask if the federal interest would be adequately satisfied by a decision that the appellant here didn't have standing to appeal and the judgment of the Court of Appeals was vacated?
The doubt which the Court of Appeals has raised about the Act would still be there. Now, the decision itself would have been vacated, and we would have to wait another case in which the matter would be litigated.
You wouldn't have any doubt about how it would come out in the Third Circuit.
I would not, sir. No. The case is a puzzle.
I'm not sure of what your answer is. You don't think the federal interest would be adequately vindicated by vacating the decision?
The cloud would still be there, Justice Stevens.
So you'd rather have an advisory opinion?
On the jurisdictional point, Justice Stevens, we do discuss that on page 5 of our brief. It's fairly intricate. I would like to proceed to the rather puzzling point in the Court of Appeals decision. One wonders why, in this case, we have had the new notion introduced that free speech has got to be balanced against the Establishment Clause, and indeed that free speech must yield to the Establishment Clause. This case is not like Wallace and Jaffrey last term, or Stone v. Graham, where the court could point to a state statute which the court concluded sought by direction or indirection to endorse religion. And indeed, this case is easier, should be viewed as easier, than its older twin brother, Widmar against Vincent, because in Widmar, the state had reasons of its own, quite apart from the Federal Establishment Clause, for wishing to limit the access of those students to their religious activities. Here, the controverted activity was entirely student-initiated. And there was no state objection, apart from the lawyer's objection based on the Federal Establishment Clause. So here we have no endorsement of religion, and we have no conflict with a substantive state educational policy. If you compare this case to cases of incidental but permissible state involvement, tax exemptions in Waltz, school buses and textbooks for parochial school students, or the use of the mall for a papal mass, one sees that here the objective involvement of the state is virtually negligible. So how is it that this case is thought to present these agonizing constitutional difficulties? Only on one premise, and that is that high school students are different. There is the fear that, unlike the rest of us, high school students are unable to discern the difference between neutrality and endorsement. That is the fear which moved the Court of Appeals in its decision, and that is the fear which is raised by the respondents and the amici in this case. Now, whether that fear is justified, whether high school students indeed are so immature that they cannot make the distinctions that the rest of us make, was a question which was specifically addressed by Congress. Hearings were held, testimony was taken, materials were examined, and Congress concluded that high school students, secondary school students was the word of the statute, are sufficiently mature to make the same distinctions that the rest of us make, that all of us had to make when that papal mass was held on the mall, to distinguish between state endorsement and state neutrality towards religion. And this court has consistently held, most recently in Rostker and Goldberg, that where Congress has made a determination of a controverted matter of general fact, that disposition is entitled to the very highest degree of deference. This case cannot be affirmed without controverting that congressional judgment about the maturity of secondary school students and rejecting the major premise of the Equal Access Act. That is why I say the federal interest is direct and substantial. Now, once that factual premise is accepted, high school students do understand the difference between neutrality and endorsement. This becomes the easiest of cases, for we are far from any actual endorsement of religion in this case. If the court has no further questions, I thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Mr. Freed, if you have a moment. You pointed out that this activity was entirely initiated by the students. To what extent was that point litigated in the court below? Did the defendants take any discovery from the plaintiffs of any kind, or were put in any evidence, or did they more or less just go along with the plaintiff's case?
The petitioners in this case made that
petitioners point. Petitioners only — oh, I'm sorry. Pardon me. Go ahead.
Petitioners made that allegation, and it was not controverted, and it was the basis for the district court's judgment and for the judgment of the Court of Appeals.
Was any pleading filed other than the one answer by the school board as an entity?
Not that I'm aware of, Justice
Mr.
Stevens.
Youngman didn't take any active part in the trial. Is that correct? Or in the
not
preparation
that I'm
of the record
of.
In the district court. He first surfaced at the time of the notice of appeal.
I'm not sure of the answer to that, Justice Stevens.
Mr. Freed, I know that you passed over the standing or jurisdiction question and referred to the passage in the Solicitor General's brief on the subject. Is it your view that a student who does not allege a desire to attend a Petros meeting has standing to complain about the fact that the school is holding such meetings or permitting them, if nothing else appears?
A student may allege an injury of a constitutional dimension if that student alleges that the going on of such activities in his school is, as it were, constitutionally offensive to that student. But I should point out that in this case, the Petros students are still seeking to meet, and the school board is still preventing them
but
from meeting.
But we don't know that any of them are before us, do we?
Of the Petros students?
Right.
I believe that the Petros students uh-huh. are included
right.
among the class of petitioners,
right, but,
Justice O'Connor.
On the other side, we're concerned about Mr. Youngman's standing, of course.
I think the way to put that concern to rest would be to realize that the school board is still preventing Petros from meeting. True, it is acting like a disinterested stakeholder. They're saying, just tell us what we should do and we'll do it. But as a stakeholder, they are currently precluding Petros from meeting. And that, I should think, would be sufficient to create a case of controversy.
But, Mr. Freed, were they doing that at the time the appeal was taken? They were not, as I understand the record. They permitted them to meet.
But after the appeal,
but
and
I'm
at this moment.
At the time of the appeal was taken, what was the controversy? Who was fighting with whom? Was there any allegation that any non-Petros child was offended by these meetings?
Mr. Youngman, I believe, at that time, was claiming on his behalf as a parent.
And where in the record do you find that?
I cannot point you to the section of the record. I believe that the record indicates that Mr. Youngman is a parent at the school and a member and a former member of the school board. Thank you.
Mr. Youngman.
Chief Justice, may it please the court. I'd like to read you the first paragraph of the complaint in this case. This is an action for declaratory judgment and permanent injunction brought by students in the Williamsport High School through the parents of these students who are minors and on behalf of all others similarly situated against the Williamsport Area School District, hereinafter the district, the superintendent of the district, the president, and each member of the school board of the district in their individual and official capacities. I was sued in my individual as well as my official capacity.
And did the judgment of the district court grant any relief against you in your individual capacity?
That is still to be decided, Justice.
But one reads the judgment, one cannot find any relief against you in an individual capacity.
There was a declaratory judgment entered, wasn't there?
That's correct.
And the judgment you didn't agree with.
That's right.
So if you were going to obey the law, you were stuck with it.
Unless I appeal.
Yes.
And if the judgment of the Court of Appeals in this case were reversed and the thing should go back to the district court saying that the procedure were consistent with the Constitution, is there any possibility then that the district court might grant further relief against you, such as attorney's fees?
That is still to be decided. There is a petition for attorney's fees against me inter alia, and I contend that I am not liable individually for attorney's fees. Furthermore,
Kentucky against Graham, I suppose.
What?
Excuse me. And Kentucky against Graham, which clearly makes you not liable for fees.
That's right. Furthermore, I wish to correct a misimpression. My son, who is my youngest, is a junior in the high school at the present time and not in ninth grade. I would like to, when standing became a question in this case, a successor of mine, who also happens to be my minister, agreed to become respondent in this case. Thus, I think there is a case or controversy. I think it exists now. And the notion that Supreme Court Rule 28, as a successor in interest who agrees with my position.
So you think that here he is now a respondent?
That's right. That's correct.
And that's in his capacity as a member of this, his official
capacity?
That's
right. That's in his official capacity.
And he can speak for the entire board?
No, that isn't the point. But a dissenting board member has a right to speak, too, and has a right to challenge this adjudication.
And to impose a liability for fees and costs on the board itself. One person can do that.
I think I have the right to oppose that myself. And I think
impose it. Yes. You know of any other situation in which one member of a board has been able to litigate on behalf of the entire board when the rest of the board takes the opposite position?
I don't presume to litigate on behalf of the entire board. I took the appeal as one member of the board who dissented from the decision not to appeal. All right. I'd like to draw the court's attention.
May I just ask one question, then I won't take any more of your time.
Yes.
Prior to your filing the notice of appeal in this case, had you independently taken any action or had anybody on the school board taken action to resist the claim other than file an answer?
Yes. We had counsel employed to fight this case on the ground.
Did they take any depositions?
Yes.
Whose deposition?
They took the deposition of the principal and the superintendent.
The plaintiff's lawyer took the deposition of the principal.
Yes.
Did the defendant's lawyer take any depositions?
No, but the defendant's lawyer procured affidavits of both the principal and the superintendent, submitted papers and briefs, and argued the cross motion for summary judgment. So, yes, they did participate. And the defendants did participate. I'd like to call the court's attention to the joint appendix. At the bottom of page 63, the question, what is the policy of the Williamsport School District regarding student clubs and student meetings on public school grounds? Answer. Policy has been that any group of students that wishes a meeting within the outlines, the confines of the building, must meet with a faculty advisor. The point of this is that the forum as it existed at Williamsport High School prior to the decision of the district court in this case was that these clubs had advisors. What is an advisor? I direct your attention to page 83 of the record, the joint appendix, excuse me. Question, what sort of adult supervision does the school district generally require of student groups? You might have answered that before, but I don't remember. Answer, any group of students that meets within the confines of the school district meets with an advisor, a paid coach or somebody of that nature, somebody that is on the faculty or somebody that is being hired by the Williamsport Area School District to perform the function. And then on down the page, generally speaking, do adult supervisors participate in the student group meetings or activities? Answer, I would say yes. If they're an advisor, I would expect them to be there as somebody who's going to help the students. Question: are there any student clubs for which the faculty advisor is instructed not to participate? Answer: not to my knowledge. And then a question is, are these advisors hall monitors? Answer: I do not look upon them upon advisors as hall monitors. I think they're there to help the activities. That was the forum as it existed at Williamsport High School prior to the decision of the district court in this case. Petros did not meet until after the district court, other than informally, until after the district court decided this case and issued its order. So that the district court in this case altered the forum as it existed. The relevance of that is that it is our position that the petitioners must live with the forum as it existed. And that forum was to have advisors. Why? Because the school board wants to have structure and direction given in the educational process. And that occurred in these clubs before the district court's order in this case, and it's our contention that should occur, and that by the district court's altering the forum, it gives the petitioners the right to negotiate as to how the forum will be, and that is not consonant with the basic purpose of public education.
Mr. Youngman.
Yes.
You gave Joint Appendix 33 as a source. I wonder if that could be
83, Mr. Chief Justice. Then on page 70, question: if there were a group of students who came to the school, whether they were in a club or not, if they came into the school, are they required to be under the direct supervision of either a principal or a faculty member? Answer: if the students are meeting as a club, such as the Key Club, their advisor would be required to meet with them. If they are not meeting as a club group or were just in the building, we have principals and teacher monitors.
Mr. Youngman, why are you reading us these excerpts? Is it to show that the district court misconceived the factual setting?
That's right.
And did the Court of Appeals disagree position with any of the district court's factual?
The Court of Appeals did not disagree. However, we believe that the Court of Appeals misread the nature of the forum.
Well, then you're asking us to upset a finding made by the district court and not upset by the Court of Appeals.
That's correct.
Do you lose, or do you have other grounds?
We certainly have other grounds, Justice White. If there is it is our position here that there is an establishment violation, whether or not there was a public forum or not. And that is based on the nature of the forum as it existed at Williamsport High School. We believe that when an advisor is present to help the students, this objectively is sponsoring and advancing religion. In addition, I would point out on page 76 of the record, with respect to this advisor, the answer of Mr. Newton, the principal, to Mr. Seaver's question: do you and the other principals or supervisors actively check, attend periodically student groups to make sure that the speech which is going on is what you consider proper? Answer: I would say that the very rule that we have with regard to any group must meet with a faculty advisor gives us direct input as to what is going on. And then there is a stipulation in this case found on page 144 of the appendix with respect to this advisor situation. There is a reading in the middle of paragraph 1, faculty advisors. There is, however, an unwritten policy of the Williamsport Area High School that each student club have an adult advisor who is generally a faculty member or other employee of the school district. In some circumstances, parents of student club members serve as adult advisors. And then in the next principle, in the next paragraph, selection is based upon the nature of the particular club and corresponding background of the faculty member. Although students may request a particular adult advisor, the principal and his staff have final approval as to who will serve as an advisor to a student club. Then I would like to point out on page 65 of the appendix that the nature of the forum as it existed in the question, are there any political clubs such as the Young Democrats or Young Republicans, something of that nature? No. And yes.
By that, if you'll clear it up for me, that if the faculty member was there, they could participate in the debate of the students on the political issue?
And give, that is correct, Chief Justice.
So if the faculty advisor had Republican leanings, he could, or she could, influence the line of discussion? Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, there was no Republican club. That's
no,
the whole
I'm giving
point.
You a hypothetical.
If
they could have one, could they not? A Republican or a Democratic club?
They could have had one, but that was not the nature of the forum as it existed at Williamsport High School.
Well, but we're concerned here with the scope of the authority as well as with what really took place. So clear that up for me, if you will. Could a group of students get together and say, we want to have a meet with this other group who are Democrats and we'll call ourselves Republicans and have a debate? They could do that under this arrangement?
I'm not sure. I just don't know what would have happened in that case.
Well, can you suggest anything in the program that prohibits that?
There is nothing except that the clubs that were in this forum were uncontroversial. And I believe that the school board would not have opened this forum generally to First Amendment speech on the ground that they would not have wanted to promote controversy and divisiveness. The purpose of the forum was to examine, first of all, to expand on directly curricular activities.
Would you suggest that the school performs its function of getting young people ready for citizenship if it would forbid a group to get together, one asserting a Democratic position, one asserting a Republican position, and perhaps someone asserting a socialist position? Do you think they could prohibit that?
If there were a non-public forum, I believe yes. That is my position, and I think they could prohibit that, absent a public forum. If there was a public forum, then no. The answer to that is no. I would also like to call the attention of the court to the joint appendix at page 104, the second paragraph, which is an affidavit of Wayne E. Newton, the principal of the school, the last paragraph prior to Roman numeral 3. Any student activity or club which is considered to contribute to the intellectual, physical, or social development of the students and is otherwise considered legal and constitutionally proper would likely be approved as an officially sponsored and sanctioned school activity. That was also the nature of the clubs. They were approved. They were sponsored. And that is the nature of the public school. There is structure. There is direction. And people understand that what goes on there is approved and sponsored by the district. That is the nature of it.
By your responses, suppose a group of the students said, we want to have one of these seminars, one of these gatherings in the school in this period to discuss the whole problem of the budget deficit. We kids, the children would say to the faculty, we kids are going to have to pay that, and we'd like to have a debate about it. Would that be permitted?
My reaction is that that would be permitted. The point is, it would have an advisor there and would be subject to structure and direction from the school district. We as a school board were not going to give up our right to give structure and direction to the education that was going on in the public schools. If that had happened, believe me, the parents would have been in on us the next day complaining loudly and bitterly about having a situation where there was no direction or being applied at the school.
Well, what if the student group wasn't going to have a debate about the budget, but they were going to, students against taxation, and they want to have their meeting like all the other groups around and discuss how they can oppose taxation. Now, suppose the school approved them, sent an advisor there, take the role. Do you think that the public would think that the views expressed at that meeting were the school's views?
I don't think so.
What makes you think that the ordinary member of the public would think that the views expressed at this, what's the name of the group, Petros?
Petros.
Why would you think that, why would the public think that the views expressed there were the schools?
The problem isn't the public, Justice White. It's the students themselves.
The students. Do you think the students, in my other example, do you think the other students would think the school was espousing the views expressed at that meeting against taxation of any kind?
If this was the anti-taxation club,
uh-huh,
and it had an advisor,
yes,
that activity would be viewed by the students at the high school as being approved by the...
You say that too, that the students would think the school was... Fundamentally endorsing a cancellation of taxation, and even though the school's life depends on it.
You see?
That's kind of silly, isn't it?
Well, it's silly until you consider the nature of a public high school. We educate kids that run the gamut from educable mentally retarded,
mm-hmm,
to gifted. And the perceptions of those kinds of children, especially at the lower end of the intellectual scale, are very much more subject to impressionability than it seems ridiculous to you and me that would happen. But with that kind of child, that can happen.
Do you think the standards should be set to gauge to the lowest common denominator, the retarded?
Well,
that's what you seem to suggest.
No, Mr. Chief Justice, but some accommodation has to be given to that that situation. Just as I don't think you should gear the standard to the highest level, because you span the gamut. That's a distinction from the university situation, where people are there, first of all, who aren't compelled to be there, and secondly, who have some intellectual ability to begin with, and are admitted on that basis.
Well, what if in the next room, besides the alongside of the group that's against all taxation, is a group that it's called the Committee for Fair Taxation, and they supporting taxation?
There, of
now,
course.
Which group is another student going to think the student the school is endorsing?
You have opposites. In the forum, and there it is more difficult, I grant. But some students would think it was that the school was endorsing one and some the other, unless they also understood that both groups were there and understood the purpose of both
groups. Well, in judging the effect of a particular course of conduct for Establishment Clause purposes, wouldn't we apply an objective test that would ask what a reasonable student would think?
Well, you would apply an objective test. That is true. That's one of the tests you would apply. But you'd also apply the subjective test, which is what would the students as they exist at the high school reasonably perceive from the activity that was going on. And there,
yes, a reasonable person standard, not one that's geared either to the high or the low end of the spectrum or to individual problems.
But I don't think you can entirely discount the fact that you do have the low end of the spectrum in this particular situation. And that is the nature of public education. It educates everyone.
Mr. Youngman, in defending this case, was any effort made to bring out evidence that would support the suggestion you're making that some of the high school students would perceive endorsement? There's nothing in the record to support that, is there?
No. That's right.
Yes.
And that is something that I think this court has to determine whether it should take judicial notice of.
Even though nobody in the trial of the case thought it important enough even to develop factually.
Even though the record doesn't have expert testimony in this regard. I will say this, that the record in the Equal Access Act is in some ways equally deficient. That is, I'm not sure that this is the kind of thing that can be quantified that way. It is a matter of if you brought up students or brought up kids between the ages of 14 and 18, you know they're impressionable.
But, Mr. Youngman, isn't it true that this program was permitted to operate for about a year after the district court decision, and there's nothing in the record to suggest anybody was even remotely unhappy about it in any way? We got any misperceptions or anything? Nobody thought to supplement the record after the program had been going for a year.
That is true, and I would suggest that one of the reasons for that was that this matter was in litigation. And you did not have another religious club or a group of religious clubs, as I feel you would have to have, will inevitably result if the decision of the circuit court is reversed. So that is my reasoning, Justice Stevens, for that.
Does the record tell us anything about the attendance during that year, how popular the group was?
The record says that the club did not exceed 45 members.
That was at the very first meeting.
That's 45. Right.
And it was about 20 at the second meeting.
And then
they met for a year. Do we know how many?
No, the record doesn't show how many met.
We don't know whether it's 2 or 3 or 20 or 30.
You don't know that from the record. I suspect it was between 20 and 45, a relatively small number. But the fact of the matter that was this matter was in litigation then, and I think that there was an inhibiting effect of that, and that that's why you haven't had the others come in and ask for access, which I fully expect to happen if this case is reversed.
May I ask this question? Do you agree with the Court of Appeals that the only difference between this case and Widmore is the age of the students?
No.
CA 6 said that.
I think Widmore is distinguished also by the very nature of public schools as opposed to the university.
Without regard to the age of the pupils?
Without regard to the age, that's right. We span the gamut, as I've said.
In what respect?
In intellect, from educable mentally retarded to gifted.
That has to do with age, though, maturity.
Well, it has to do with age, but it also has to do with maturity regardless of age, too. And so is the point.
So the Lemon test turns, in this case, solely on the question of the age of children, age of the pupils.
No, it also
That's
turns...
That's what CA6 said.
Excuse me,
The Court of Appeals said that explicitly.
Yes. But I don't believe that that should be the test. I think it should be... It should turn on the nature of the public school as opposed to the university.
Who finances the University of Missouri? Taxpayers? Same as the grade school and high school?
As I understand it, the taxpayers did finance the University of Missouri.
It's a public school.
That is correct. That is correct. But the university situation is different from the secondary and elementary education provided in the compulsory attendance setting. And there's just no way to avoid that.
Mr. Young, suppose we reverse the Court of Appeals and the school board says, well, even if this is not an establishment, we nevertheless don't want the group to meet, and we are perfectly free to do that, just at our own decision. Would the district court's decision stand as a bar to
the district and circuit court's decision? If, with respect to the open forum question, would mean that any First Amendment club has a right to be in that forum.
All right, so that the free speech interest would get them into the school regardless of the wishes of the school board.
That is correct. That is
at least that's what the two courts below said.
That's right. You would leave no discretion to the school board in the running of the educational process in that particular forum.
Your time has expired now, Mr. Dillon. Thank you. Do you have anything further, Mr. Smart?
Mr. Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice. First of all, I'd like to disagree with Mr. Youngman about the discretion of the school administrators. I view the decision of the district court in this case resting on the fact that the Establishment Clause was the only reason asserted for denying this group an opportunity to meet. And right. I think it would be a different case.
Would you say that under the... Would you say that if we reverse the Court of Appeals, the school board could nevertheless keep your group out?
I think it would be an entirely different case.
And, no, that isn't what I asked you.
I think they could keep it out if they had
You mean despite their free speech interest?
No, only if they had a structured activity period. Only if they had
There is a structured activity period, isn't there?
And if it's predetermined what the categories are in their curricular, then they could keep them out.
Well, if there's a forum in the school, you would think your group should be able to get in. You would think the First Amendment would require them to get in.
Yes, Your Honor, we would argue that.
Well, what if the school policy were that we will have an activities period and it is open only to secular groups to meet?
Can the
school do that? Not considering the act passed by Congress that might superimpose some different standard today. As a matter of constitutional doctrine, could the school do?
Your Honor, I do not believe that they could articulate a valid reason for having only secular activities once they have opened the forum. I also think it would create establishment clause problems with regard to excessive entanglement of determining what's religious and what's not religious, as the court discussed in the Widmar case. So I think that would be a problem.
I guess they'd simply have to abandon the whole program and kick your group out.
Your Honor, I think they would not have to abandon the whole program. I think they have a choice of curricular related groups that are an extension of the curriculum, or letting the students decide. And if they let the students decide, then they can't keep the religious group out. And all we're saying here is that we believe they've opened the forum, and we're just asking to be included in that.
Mr. Smart, do you take the position your clients have the right to use the bulletin boards as the other activities groups do?
No, Your Honor, that is not in this case. Our clients have never sought that right.
I know
right.
You haven't sought it, but assume they did seek it. Would they not have the same right as others, and if not, why not?
If our students had sought that right, then I think this court would want to know more about the details of how that's administered, who puts the notices up there, who determines what's up there, and that sort of thing. We would argue that if it's the students putting the notices up there, then the concept of neutrality, if everyone realizes this is the students' bulletin board and they can put whatever they want to up there, then the concept of neutrality requires that they have equal access to that bulletin board. If there were more government involvement in the board, then it might be a different question.
Well, Mr. Smart, under your view, would the board have to permit some group such as Sons of Satan or whatever it might be that would be entirely anti-religious to come and meet?
Yes, Your Honor. Under our view, the school board would have to permit
or a neo-Nazi party.
Or a neo-Nazi party, unless the school board can articulate a compelling interest. And a school board would have probably two options in that regard. Number one, a hate group or something of that nature might present a compelling state interest to keep them out. Or a school district could always go to a parental consent format if it was causing a lot of political turmoil for the school board to have such a group. I think that would be an easier way. It would keep the government from prescribing what is orthodox.
Did both parties here agree that in this instance an open forum had been created?
Did both parties agree?
Mm-hmm. Both sides.
Both sides in the district court, I think, in effect, agreed that at least that was not contested.
So perhaps it isn't necessary in this case to wrestle with all those
That's
problems.
Exactly right.
The only barrier is the Establishment Clause.
The only thing we're asking this court is to decide that our group does not face any additional barrier because of the Establishment Clause.
But wasn't there an issue in the Court of Appeals whether any kind of an open forum had been created at all?
Because it's the Court of Appeals spent a lot of time discussing it and saying, yes, there is one.
That was certainly argued by Mr. Youngman in the Court of Appeals that there was no public forum created.
Exactly. And I suppose in support of the judgment below, he could argue it here.
Yes, Your Honor, he could argue that. The fact is that the only reason that the school district said that we can't meet is because of the Establishment Clause. They did not say, well, we think that this is inappropriate.
Mr. Smart, does the record contain the legal opinion on which the school board relied?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Does the record contain the legal opinion on which the school board relied?
It does not contain the letter from the attorney. However, we do have a recitation in the record from the superintendent of what the attorney said.
I understand, but the opinion itself was not put in the record.
The opinion itself is not in the record, but it is clear from the record that the opinion of the attorney concerning the Establishment Clause was the only reason. And I think that it would be a different case if the school had said it's inappropriate for this reason or that reason or some other reason. And I think as lawyers...
Your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. Is your arguments next?